Looking Forward Our Way podcast addresses today's critical issues affecting adults in Ohio. We focus on issues that affect our money and our neighborhoods. Our expert guests are here to provide the information and resources needed to address those challenges. We are looking forward our way. Hi, this is Brett. Over the past few years, the housing crisis created innumerable challenges. With the lack of housing and increase in housing costs, we had a dramatic increase in property taxes. The recent reappraisal process saw tax bills increase by nearly 35%. That's not an easy issue to digest, but today we're going to closely examine what happened and what we Ohioans can do about it. Let's welcome our guest, State Senator Bill DeMora of Ohio's 25th District. Senator DeMora, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I am very privileged to have known Senator DeMora for many years, going back to, I think he was a new graduate from Ohio State.
Probably, 1989 is when I graduated, yeah.
Yeah, just about that time, working on the Young Buckeyes Alumni Club.
Yep.
So that's how Bill and I crossed tracks. But in January of this year, he wrote a guest column for the local paper, which really struck me deeply. Needless to say, my county and my pocket were hit really hard in the tax increase. So, but Senator, before we get into this incredibly complex issue, we want to know more about you, your career in the political realm, and now you're in an elected office. What issues are most important to you?
Well, I mean, I'm in the minority. Obviously, I tell people I'm the accidental senator because back in 2022, when they had all the redistricting mess and they couldn't decide on a district and the court kept striking them down, the federal court mandated a district that was in effect until January 1st of this year, and we had no candidate in it. So being the petition guy for the state Democratic Party and the county Democratic Party, I circulated petitions in a weekend before what should have been the new filing deadline, which would have been the May primary date back in 2022, because we had two primaries, May and September, because of the redistricting mess. And I filed signatures. We told a dozen people to file. No one else filed. It was just me. And then we had to sue. Secretary of State denied my candidacy along with several others because he said that August election was a special election, not a primary, even though it was just the only people running were Democrats against Democrats and Republicans against Republicans, which is the definition of a primary. And the state Supreme Court ruled 4-3. The case was DeMora et al. Versus LaRose. DeMora got 4 votes. LaRose got 3, putting myself, Anita Samani from the Hilliard area, and some other people across the state on the ballot that year in 2022 for the August election, so long as they had enough signatures and qualified otherwise. So I got on the ballot, and everybody thought I was a placeholder, but the way the court ruled with the elections calendar, if I would have dropped out after winning the primary, it would have been too late to get out for the general election, so that seat would have been vacant again. So here I am, the accidental senator. Never thought I'd be in public office. I like being the guy behind the scenes. I've been running campaigns for 30 years and been the hatchet man for the Democratic Party for that long. So but now I'm in public office, and it's different, especially in the minority, especially when you have to conduct yourself one way instead of the way I used to conduct myself, which was scorched earth policy. But issues important to me. I mean, obviously, both my parents were public school teachers. I went to public schools, so public school education is very important to me. What the state is doing, not funding public schools and giving all the money to vouchers, is ridiculous. And I fought against vouchers and state money going to private schools. The property tax committee I was on last year, and we need to do something for property taxes, and we'll get into that later. Another issue, I mean, I've been trying to find, I introduce bills sometimes just for the media attention, and I have several of those. My Peacock bill to ban Ohio State sports on streaming-only services, which has gotten me on national attention the last couple weeks. Another bill to go after, our Supreme Court ruled last year that boneless is a way to prepare a wing and not a description of the wing, and they can have bones and boneless wings in Ohio, the only state in the union that you can, that according to the Supreme Court, you should expect a bone in a boneless wing because chickens have bones in them. I don't know how they came up with that decision, but so I have legislation that would.
And nothing better to deal with.
So I have, I have legislation that would, wouldn't going to help the gentleman who got the bone stuck in him and was in a coma for 2 months, but it would change the way that these cases are decided in the future. I have, I'm working on other legislation to, deal with. I mean, I'm on both the utilities committee and the energy committee. We've been dealing with that huge energy bill the last 3 months that maybe we're voting on next week. So I was on the, I was the Democratic Party expert on marijuana. Our bill was horrible. The Senate passed, basically taking away the rights away from them. I voted no. They didn't put any of the stuff in there that I wanted. So I've been working on all kinds of things because it's never a dull moment in the State House.
Yeah. Oh, it's not a dull moment in the State House. And luckily, you, even as an accidental senator, you walked in, as you said, with 30 years experience behind the scenes. Now you're the picture, the face of the opposition, and that has to have changed your life a lot.
I don't know if it changed my life. I'm still doing my other jobs. I mean, last year I was running a statewide, or two statewide campaigns for incumbent Supreme Court candidates. I was running a local judicial race. I was running another person running in a primary and then general election for House of Representatives here in Franklin County. And I was in charge of the national convention and doing delegate selection and ran the entire convention in Chicago for my eighth time me in charge of the convention. So I still do my other jobs. This is just another job I have, so I have three full-time jobs now instead of just one or two.
You know, people are complaining a lot about politics, and I always say, do something. Don't sit back and just complain. But part of this also is people aren't running for office. People are so sick of the whole process, the whole system, that nobody wants to put their name out there like you have in many different venues.
No, that's a problem. I mean, in Franklin County, that's not an issue because here, unlike the rest of the state, Franklin County, along with Cincinnati, Cleveland areas, are dominated by Democrats. And we always have more people wanting to run for office than spots available. And we a lot of times have primary. You see right now we have 10 people running for Columbus School Board. We have 3 people running for the open seat in Columbus City Council. We have lots of races going on in the suburbs. I think there are 6 Democrats running for 4 seats in Hilliard in the council primary. So in Franklin County, that's not the case. The state party has been trying to get people to run in every office across the state for school board, for township trustee, for city council, for mayors. And we've been doing a bunch to increase people running for office. But I agree, it's at the local level, it's not maybe as bad. But, everything's so divided now. Although I have great relationships with most of my Republican colleagues, and most bills at the State House, 90% of them are voted out basically unanimously. It's just the ones that everybody reads about, the contentious ones are always vote along party lines unless a Republican or two comes on our side because they realize how bad something is. Like 2 Republicans voted against SB1, which would gut higher education. 2 Republicans actually voted on our side. So the vote was, there was 11 votes against instead of the normal 9 because there were only 9 of us in the Senate. But people do have to get involved. If you don't get involved, then basically what happens to you, you don't matter. But if you get involved and make your voice out there, then people got to pay attention to you. I mean, I talk to constituents all the time. And again, part of the problem is that our legislative districts and our congressional districts are so gerrymandered that one side's going to win them regardless of, the Pope could run for state representative in some of these districts in rural Ohio, and he'd only get 20% of the vote.
Right.
So that's how bad the districts are, and that discourages people. But overall, like I said, it gets contentious for certain issues at the State House, but, afterward, we do socialize, and I do get along with most of our Republican colleagues.
Well, and I have always found the system to be interesting. Yes, frustrating, but interesting. I did an internship in Congress when I was in graduate school. You can't know really what's going on unless you're in the midst of it. So even if you're not running for office, get involved, be active on campaigns, find out what's going on, talk to your local legislators.
Testify on committees, yes. Testify in city council meetings. I mean, every public body has abilities to participate in their process, whether it's city council meetings with going into city council meeting and talking about an issue or coming to the State House. If there's a bill that you like or don't like, any citizen can come and testify on it. And
that's
they're all given the same amount of time. I mean, some committees like yesterday for SB1, the House was, and they had over 100 witnesses and they limited it to only 70 and they cut people off, but the House did that. But I'll give the Senate credit, even though the bill was horrible, the chairperson of the Higher Education Committee in the Senate did allow everybody to testify and gave them all their 3 minutes to do so. No matter how many people it was, they all got to testify. So Senate's usually different than the House, but everybody should come and testify because that's participating in government and that's what everybody should do. And we don't teach enough civics anymore. We don't teach enough how government works. Government affects everybody's life every day in multiple ways, whether it's the roads you drive on, the schools you go to, if you have high-speed internet or not, how much you're paying for insurance. All those things are governed by state government, and people need to be involved and know what the, how the process works, or they just, you know, they can complain, but who's going to listen to a complainer if they don't participate?
Well, and with all that's been going on, there are a lot of sites out there that'll tell you, you know, who are your legislators, who is representing you. And listeners, don't forget, we always do a list of resources for each one of our podcasts, and we'll be putting all that information in there. So thank you for letting me do that little sort of wiggle around here.
Well, I've got to do a follow-up question, though. We're going to get to it, though. And this is good, though. So the testifying, I get the impression that people, yes, they want to go testify, but at the same time, you get the impression that they got their minds made up already. Is this a dog and pony show? Do people listen to the testimonies and get an ear, at least rethink?
On some issues they do. Now, of course, issues that are cultural hot button issues, people have their minds made up. And
it's kind of a general way to ask.
Yes,
I know.
Yes.
It's a difficult way
but
to
for
answer.
Instance, but I will tell you that, I mean, last year in insurance committee during lame duck session, we were hearing testimony on Marcy's Law, which is would mandate children's hearing aids be covered by insurance. The bill had been introduced three consecutive sessions prior to that and never passed. And the House had already passed it, and the Senate was going to pass it. And there were people that were not sure they were going to vote for it. Hmm. But the supporters of that bill brought in kids, literally a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old that had hearing aids that told their stories about that they couldn't hear, and you know, they had to dig a MyFundMe page to get hearing aids because they couldn't hear. And now that they're hearing, they're learning so much better, and they don't feel ostracized in their classes. And I'll tell you, I was moved, and I know my colleagues were moved because that bill finally passed, and we voted it out, and it now is law because the governor signed it. So it does on certain issues that aren't partisan. If it's a completely partisan issue, again, maybe one or two people might switch. But then it's not going to happen. But for issues like Marcy's Law, like other issues that are just trying to help people that are, I would call, you know, just good government issues, testifying on them can change. I mean, make an amendment that maybe no one thought about it. Someone comes in and says, hey, why aren't we doing this? That gets listened to, and that gets into the bill, and it becomes law. So, again, if you're coming to say whether abortion should be legal or not, no one's mind is going to be, you're not going to change anybody's mind on that. But something like this, something like our energy, the utility bill we've been hearing, we've had dozens and dozens of witnesses, and we were on our fifth or sixth draft of the bill because it keeps changing because people forget doing things. So testimony is important because as legislators, we're not experts. We have to listen to the people that are experts and come give their opinions. And if they point something out that we are missing or don't have in there that we think we should, it does matter.
Okay. And really part of that message is the legislators don't know what they don't know. They may not know to ask particular questions. Mm-hmm. If you don't bring it up, then basically don't sit at home and complain.
That's right.
If you have to bring it up.
Township issues, I mean, stuff that involves, you know, like the transportation bill. I mean, all kind of people come in for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, and it's a wide open process. Amendments are turned in because people think of something, don't think of something.
Yeah. Especially with the general, when it's focused on the general public, like transportation.
Right. Yes. I mean, again, the partisan issues are never going to change anybody's mind.
Those are, exactly. No.
Because you're not going to change any citizen's mind on where they think on it either. Unless, of course, you know, former Senator Rob Portman didn't like LGBTQ people until his child became one. And then, of course, he was a champion of their issue. So, you know, it's personal experience. But again, he didn't change his mind because of people coming and doing it because his own child came out as gay. So, but other than that, regular issues, we do listen to the citizens because we might not know enough about it.
So Ohio's full tax system is complicated. Can you give us, as best as you can, an overview of the property tax system? I mean, it affects not only state tax revenue, but more importantly, our local communities for services like schools, fire, police, parks, and a whole lot more.
Right. So, I mean, it's very complicated, as you said. It's property taxes are based upon the appraised value of someone's personal property or business property. You know, businesses are taxed as well. All but certain, like churches are not taxed. Certain charitable groups' property is not taxed, but those are few and far between. And then, of course, have you seen a lot of local municipalities give tax incentives or tax breaks or waive taxes on certain properties in order to encourage them to move there or to develop there or to build housing or something like that. So all that stuff factors in. And so basically, it's the appraisal is all the properties in a county, because each county appraises their own properties. And the taxes are distributed for each of the properties that are being taxed. So, for instance, if we had, say, 3,000 churches in Franklin County that made up one-third of the land, and they're not paying taxes, the people that own the other two-thirds of the land have to come up with, after between themselves, they get assessed that two-thirds of the property taxes that are left, their percentage of it. So it's very complicated. Most property tax does go towards schools. I mean, some does go to garbage service, police and fire, that, but a lot of that stuff comes out of the general fund budget as well. Sales taxes, income taxes, and the like. So the majority in Ohio, the majority of property taxes are toward public schools. Tax entities in Ohio, you can have a county tax, a city tax, a township tax, a village tax, a school district tax, and special districts like sewer districts or fire districts or park districts, library districts. They all have the ability to tax, to assess property taxes if the voters, most of them have to be approved by voters. Some of them do not. Circumstances about emergency school taxes and stuff like that sometimes don't have to be passed by the voters, but majority of them have to be approved by the voters who are going to be affected by the tax.
The reappraisal process is on a specific timeline.
Every 6 years total, but every 3 years they come out with different values, yes.
And it's all you just specified that. I always thought it was just personal property, but it also is business property too.
Correct. Commercial, everything, yes.
Okay.
So Franklin County did it in 2023. That's why everybody's thing went up, because, and it's all also based on housing in the county or in the area, because if we had plenty of houses, the property values, you wouldn't pay as much to buy a house, mm-hmm. because there was plenty of, it's all supply and demand. If there's lots of supply, the demand goes down and the price goes down. If there's no supply, which Franklin County has no supply right now, and most of Ohio has no supply in the urban areas, then with no supply, the demand is high and people are going through the roof paying for tax. I mean, you try to sell a house in Grandview right now, you would, say you said you set the cost at $500,000, you would have five people offering you cash for $550,000 or $600,000 within a week trying to get that property, because there's so few properties in certain areas that people want to live in. So that's what's based on it too. So if your neighbor sells a house for $600,000, your house then is appraised at a higher level because that's what the market is now demanding for a property similar to what you paid. So that's how things get kind of jacked up. In some areas where there is no demand for housing, I mean, lots of areas in Ohio no one wants to move to, all the areas around Franklin County are all high now because everybody wants to come. We're expecting another 300,000 or 400,000 people in Franklin County in the next 15-20 years. Mm-hmm. So the demand is unbelievable and the supply is not there. We're supposed to build 20,000 houses a year to meet the supply. We're only building half of that. So that all drives up the appraisal value of the house, which means the property taxes are raised. And it's not a one-to-one. You don't pay, if my house is worth $500,000, I'm not paying property taxes on that $500,000. There are certain other formulas that come into play that reduce that, and you pay tax on a certain percentage of what your house is worth.
And then the apartment complexes, the taxes are paid by the complex owners?
The owners, and okay. Of course they build in their rent to that it yeah. goes in the rent. Yes, well, it all depends.
Okay. And even like with, I'm in a condominium, so I pay as the owner of the house, and basically I own the air inside my house because the house itself is part of the condominium,
right.
And the condominium pays taxes, but I get an assessment, so I'm actually paying twice.
Right.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, so and condos have to have two insurances, one for everything inside your house,
right.
And then the condo association has to have one for the dwelling, but you have to have your own insurance to cover what's inside your house, correct?
And the dwelling insurance, again, is paid because I have a condo fee.
Right.
You know, exactly. So because right. the associations don't have any money except those monthly fees to pay right. those kinds of bills. So right. yeah. it is crazy.
Hmm. So we're seeing that taxes are also used for funding the administration of county and local entities like townships. But there's a disconnect in the system, right? The property owners are taxed, but everyone reaps the benefits of the services.
Well, it basically, everybody votes on the tax levies, but the people who are paying the taxes are property owners, not necessarily, you know, people who are renting. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, for instance, that's basically the case, although renters end up paying it indirectly.
Monthly.
But for instance, you know, back, the reason that you put school levies up at certain times used to be because when you had a higher turnout elections, there'd be higher turnout, and there'd be higher turnout of people that aren't property owners that would vote for certain taxes. Nowadays, actually, it's the opposite. If you're a school levy, you want to go on an odd numbered year where there's lower turnout so you can turn out your supporters more by energizing them instead of having a higher turnout, because the Trump effect, people are turning out more when Trump is on the ballot, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so now if you're doing a levy, you want to do it. The reason issue 1 and 2 passed in 2023 was because cities had mayoral races, council races, those sort of things. So there's going to be a higher turnout in the cities for their internal races. And the people that were opposed to issue 1 and 2, which were the abortion rights and marijuana, they had nothing in their local communities to bring them out otherwise, other than the state issue. So if you weren't paying attention, and that's why they both won overwhelmingly, if you saw issue 1 in 2024 lost because the people that came out to vote for Trump all voted no on issue 1, that would have changed districts, because of course the wording, there are lots of issues, but basically what happened is the people that voted for Trump voted against issue 1.
And basically understanding how people get energized to vote is why you see certain things show up on a ballot.
But yeah,
Is there a backlash though? Like in Delaware County, my property taxes, 85% are the schools and the technical programs.
Yeah.
So it's all educational based. But so 85% is pretty high.
Most counties is that high.
Okay. But again, a whole lot of the folks who, now I think Delaware County is probably more homeowners than renters, where
except the Columbus outskirts around Polaris, those are all apartments, obviously.
Right. But is there a backlash with homeowners that are tired of paying more
there
taxes?
There are, especially senior citizens who have fixed incomes, and we'll get into it later probably, but one of the bills I have that I'm working on is to freeze property taxes of senior citizens if you're X number of years old, 70 or 72, I forget what it's at now, and make under a certain amount of money per year, and if so, you're on a fixed income, you've been in your house for 10 years, you're over a certain age, or you're a disabled veteran, or some other things along those lines.
That basically expand the homestead?
No, this would freeze your property taxes at the level prior to being raised, so that you could budget. So you would have the same amount of property taxes every year. And it doesn't, this way doesn't take money away from the schools. It doesn't allow the schools to get extra money from those properties, but they know ahead of time who those properties are, so they can budget those things.
Okay.
And we're not taking money away from them, just the freezing amount that they had
at a certain formula. Okay. Yeah.
So, and then when the house is sold, whoever buys that house, the taxes go up to where they would be if the person was paying them regularly.
Okay.
Doubling the homestead exemption. Right now, homestead exemption is something like $23,000 or $24,000. I have the exact number here. Let me find it. It's very low. I mean, you can't buy a shack in Franklin County for what the homestead exemption is at now. So doubling that would help senior citizens, a lot of other people as well. A circuit breaker, meaning that if the property taxes become over more than a certain percentage of your income, then they would freeze at that level. So they couldn't. So you couldn't. If we'll say 5%. If you make $100,000 and your property taxes go above $20,000 a year, $2,000 a year, 5% of your income, they would be frozen at that level. They couldn't go any higher. Hmm. And then, of course, when the next person bought the house, they would go up again. Hmm. Or another thing we're discussing is allowing senior citizens to pay X amount. So they would make payments on their property taxes. Say their taxes were $2,000 a year, they couldn't afford that. Well, they would pay $1,000 a year, which they assume you could they could afford, mm-hmm. and then the rest of it would be put. I mean, is be made up by the county or the state. And when that house would be sold, the property taxes are made up. The entity makes whole, a new person. The sale of the house covers those taxes, so that it's basically like a reverse mortgage. Yeah. The senior citizen's not paying it now, but when the taxes are when the house is sold, they don't get if they owe $20,000 in back taxes because they've only paid $20,000 out of $40,000. The $20,000 of the house sale goes right to the payoff that $20,000 again.
So the seller takes care of that.
The seller takes care of that, yeah, right? Yeah, comes off the, what they would make as a profit because right. they so should get a profit.
So it doesn't stop the buyer.
It doesn't stop the buyer, correct?
So really, what that's doing is it's preserving the ownership for the senior, and sort of puts the tax issue at bay for a short period of time.
Well, I mean, it could be 15 years or 20 years if you live that long. But yeah, and then after that 20 years. So if you owed what the house was worth, then the seller would not get anything. They would have all this back property taxes back. But
on
most
the other
of the time,
hand, when the senior is able to stay,
the senior's allowed to stay in their home, correct?
Right. So which is the ultimate goal.
Which ultimate goal?
Everybody agrees on that.
And,
right.
And
yeah.
Right. One of the things I'm going to add to this resource list we have is we had Franklin County Auditor Mike Stenziano in to
the
talk
the best auditor
about,
in the state of Ohio by far.
He is.
Yes.
He is.
I've known him since he was 3 years old.
Well, you know what? Actually, me too, because I used to send interns to his dad when he was in the legislature.
So right now, actually, Homestead is $28,000. I'll make sure I got it right.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
But Mike told us a lot about what was going on. This was when they were actively starting that reappraisal process. But he knew there was going to be a problem. So if you want that back information about what was going on in Franklin County, we'll have that podcast for you too.
Right.
So you've already touched on this a little bit. It really goes – this was not – just critical in Franklin County, it really across the country, the lack of housing availability and affordability cranked up the appraisal process that would have gone up anyway, but it just like zoomed.
Right, it zoomed it. But of course, let's be honest too, all the tax breaks going to places like Intel and the place down in Lockbourne that's going to make drones supposedly, and all the... You know, the tax breaks that are just in downtown Columbus, these apartment complex and condo complexes downtown were given 10-year tax abatements. When corporations aren't paying their fair share, the burden is passed on to the everyday regular homeowner.
And Ken, I mean, we only hear about abatements with in the private sector. It does not happen for an individual. I could build a $3 million house and the county's not going to give me an abatement.
No, but it does. I mean, if you're an individual who owns a condo downtown and with a 10-year tax abatement, you're not paying property taxes on that that stuff for 10 years or 20 or whatever the length of the tax abatement was for. So you as an individual, you would benefit by moving downtown in that circumstance.
Right.
Because you wouldn't be paying property taxes for 10
years. You'd only be living in 500 square feet, but hey,
Well, again, that's a decision you make.
Yeah. But, right, yeah. Right.
I mean, a lot of younger people don't need more than that. I mean, because they're never home anyhow, and they do traveling and everything else. So, but most of it is to get industries in. And the problem is when Franklin County and Central Ohio, through MORPC and other entities, have tried to work together so they're not bidding against each other on these projects and having one city, you know, decimate another city by just overbidding and all this stuff. So it's not perfect, but it's been better here in Central Ohio than it has been other places around the state, because there's more of a Central Ohio community feeling here, and everybody's trying to work together because we are going to get so many new people in Central Ohio. Other places, you know, if someplace in Toledo is bidding against someplace in Cincinnati, and they're going to try to outbid each other, give away the tax breaks, and that all that does is hurt individual property owner. I mean, the reason cities and counties do that is because they expect the income taxes to make up. They give tax breaks on the property, but of course, anybody working in that entity, in that community, has to pay income taxes on the money they earn because they're earning that money in that county. But the Supreme Court has been a little wishy-washy on that in the last several years. And they also you also figure if you have 300 people at this building, then they're going to be spending on food and other things, and the sales taxes that go that's spent in that county would go to that county as well. It doesn't always work out that way, but that's the sense. I mean, Intel, the state's giving it so much money, and now Intel being again postponed till 2030 or 2032, or maybe we'll never see it be built. And the deal they made, the state won't recoup any of that money because that's the deal that Jobs Ohio made with the state. And since Jobs Ohio is off limits for public records or subpoena power, or even the state auditor or attorney general to even look at their books, who knows what happened? Who knows what promises they made? But I'm worried about Intel becoming a boondoggle at some point because it could just be a huge, big, you know, they poured all this concrete there. The governor said the amount of concrete they poured yesterday in the State of the State speech, but who cares if they don't, if the full-time permanent jobs are supposed to make up for that, never materialize.
Well, and a lot of the Intel jobs were based on the people who were building the building, not the number of people who were going to be employed.
They're supposed to have 2,000 or so full-time jobs there.
Yeah.
And all high-paying jobs, which mean lots of income tax from that entity.
Right.
That, but, yeah, 7,000 of those jobs are construction jobs of people doing it, and they're still constructing out there. I drove by it last month to take somebody out there to show them. But, again, those jobs are temporary. I mean, and if the project gets shut down, those construction jobs leave automatically. So
when I worked for the state, which was decades ago, there abatements were an issue then, but they were tied very, very closely to, we'll give you this much, and you have to guarantee this many people
correct.
Getting
they still
getting
are,
hired.
But they're not
but
being.
But who's watching that?
Well, I mean, entities are supposed to watch them. I mean, and those people that don't meet their goals, what they promised, then theoretically, there's the city or entity, county should go back and recoup the money they gave because they didn't meet their goals. But a lot of times they're renegotiating deals. And I mean, it's all the promise. And companies are, I think, you're taking advantage of it. I think they're doing it on purpose, some of them. And, you know, well, now if you don't let me, I'm going to lay off 100 people. But if you let me keep my tax breaks, then I won't lay off this 100 people. It's blackmail. It's corporate blackmail. And, you know, again, everybody should pay their fair share. It's not up to me as an individual to pay the more of my share than a multi-billion-dollar corporation who's not paying their share.
Right.
Oh, for
right.
sure. Yeah, exactly. Well, you were a member of the legislative committee to study the issue called the Joint Committee on Property Tax Review and Reform. Your January newspaper column highlighted the committee's work, however, noted a distinct lack of clear solutions. Could you talk about your view on what the committee did discover? And what steps should have been taken?
Well, I mean, we met, I think, 6, 7, 8 times during last summer, heard from, I would guess, 40, 50, 60 different experts and witnesses on it. Michael Stenziano, several auditors testified, business entities testified, township association, municipalities, they all came in and testified. And I was excited because I thought that our duty was going to be to come up with a couple of solutions that the legislature would have to act on last fall before the General Assembly was over, and we would have solutions that most of us could agree on, whether it would be a circuit breaker or a homestead. I think everybody on the committee, maybe except for one person, was, I think, in favor of raising the homestead exemption because that's low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And I thought we were going to have solutions to those problems and have legislation come out of it that we would debate and vote on. But nothing happened. They put out a report with 21 recommendations, some of which were counterintuitive to each other, as I pointed out in my editorial, and it came up with no legislation. We never vote as a committee. We never voted every other committee that I'm on. We have draft legislation. It gets discussed. We have testimony. We had all this testimony. We have a bill comes out of it. We either amend that bill or we change it. And then we vote it out of committee, and then the chamber votes on that after, you know, as a matter of course. But we never voted on anything in committee. We did not vote on any suggestions. We had no legislation before us. Nothing came out of this as a committee for us to vote on, which is odd, and which I was disappointed in because I thought everybody's demanding a solution to this, and we have not come up with one. I mean, there's several proposals out there. I said my proposal, Senator Craig has one with Senator Blessing. There are other kind of proposals out there, but and if some of this stuff gets stuck from the budget, which is a bad thing because it doesn't get debated as it should, and you throw everything in the budget, and you never know what's going to happen. I mean, there are always problems to come out of it. But Nothing came out of it. And even the governor yesterday in his State of the State speech never mentioned housing, never mentioned property taxes. And these are issues that are on everybody's mind right now. That's the biggest problem in the state of Ohio right now is housing and property taxes. And of course, the governor doesn't mention it. The legislative leadership, both obviously Republicans, nothing, they have no solutions. They haven't come up with anything. And all these bills are out there and they get their one perfunctory hearing, but they never go any farther than that. And we got to do something. The taxpayers are demanding it. Citizens are demanding it, but here we are. And this has been going on now for over a year and we've had no solution to the problem, even though some of the stuff is bipartisan in nature that would pass overwhelmingly if we just get it out there.
And really, legislators are famous for letting something sit forever because eventually it'll be replaced on the front page of the paper for some other problem and people will forget about it. Or the other concern that I have is the information that is out there where people want to get rid of taxes, like it's just they're going to the taxes will poof away and all the issues that were taken care of by those taxes will poof away. Well, that's not going to happen. This reappraisal thing is going to be around the corner very quickly. What does the legislators need to do?
I mean, like I said, we need to put a circuit breaker. We need to increase the homestead exemption. We need to keep senior citizens in their homes or disabled folks or veterans. So they get to keep their homes by doing something for the property taxes. So they don't get taxed out of their houses. They've been that their entire lives. And we have to start making corporations pay their fair share, because I guarantee you corporations do not pay. If half the land was corporations and half the land was owned by citizens, regular property owners, the corporations are not paying their 50% their end. The property, regular property owners like myself, like both of you, are paying 56-57% of that 100% instead of the 50% that we own. So they're not paying their fair share and they need to. But the low hanging fruit that I think most people can agree on are the circuit breaker, our homestead exemption, are to somehow freeze taxes on senior citizens or disabled, those with fixed incomes, and freeze their levels. But again, all this also goes into school funding. Because as we said earlier, most of the property taxes are directed toward public schools in Ohio. And they have to be made whole. You just can't, if you cut people's property taxes, then either the state's got to make up the money or the local entity has to make up money, which means more school levies. Because they can't, I mean, there's a certain amount of funding and the schools, you just can't stop having public schools. In this current budget, there's $2.4 billion for vouchers, yet they're not fully funding public education, because right now 87% under the governor's plan, 87-90% of the school districts would lose money under the current plan, but we're going to double the amount of money we're giving to vouchers. And, oh, by the way, if Speaker Huffman has his way, and he did in the last capital budget, taxpayer money is being used to build private charter schools. The state, last year's operating budget, raised the amount of people qualified for vouchers from 150% of poverty to 450% of poverty. All that did, it wasn't, vouchers were originally set up, the concept of vouchers came up with to help kids in underperforming schools be able to pay to go to the school to get better education. That was the thought of vouchers to start with. Mm-hmm. We all knew it was a farce. It was, at the time, it was just to make private school operators money and made them rich. And we had the whole fiasco with ECOT and all this other stuff. All these private school owners made all this money, and the schools didn't teach anybody anything. People weren't going to classes. They're just collecting state money on them. But when they last, well, 2 years ago, when the Republicans in the legislature doubled, made everybody, basically everybody's able to vouchers. Well, we've seen that over 92% of those vouchers didn't go to kids in underperforming districts. They were people already in private and parochial and charter school and private schools. And now what all they did with these schools, raise their tuition, take it so they could get more state money in. So if someone's going to Catholic school paying $5,000 3 years ago, when this increase came, that Catholic school raised their tuition to $10,000 because the state was paying that whole $10,000 freight. And all it did was have public tax dollars support private and charter schools, which is ludicrous. And if you saw the study came out yesterday, 20% of the voucher money went to people in the 1% upper 1 percentile of income in Ohio. So people that shouldn't be getting these vouchers. I'm sorry, if you're making $1 million a year, you should not be getting state voucher money to send your kids to private school. You got to pay for your kids' private school yourself.
This has been going on since what, 1980?
Yeah.
And vouchers started a long time ago.
They did.
It was under Governor Voinovich.
Of Voinovich came after Governor Celeste.
Yes.
Celeste was 82 to 90. So this came in 1990s. Yes.
Yeah.
The 90s.
Yeah.
Because of
yeah.
Cleveland, basically, the failing schools in the city of Cleveland. But there was no way Democratic Governor Richard Celeste started vouchers.
Right. Okay.
By the way, too, back when Dick Celeste was governor, the school funding that they went to, that was the case came after Dick Celeste was governor. But when in the 80s, the state share of both K through 12 education and higher education in the 80s was a lot more than it is now. And so even though the Supreme Court ruled, God, what had been 20 years ago in the DeRolf case, and that we're not fully funding public schools correctly, the state has ignored that. But also higher education. When I was in school in the 80s, the state share of the cost of me to go to college was 77%. Now it's in the 20%. And that's why tuitions are so high. That's why kids are going to debt to pay for college, because the state's not picking up their share. And this year it's going to be even, they're not even going to increase for inflation. They're holding the funding level steady. Even though inflation has been rising. So the percentage of the state pays for higher education is going lower now. And so we used to lead the country in education, and now we're in the last bottom 10%.
And the joke is that they're going to get their funding pulled if they don't toe the line right now, when in actuality there's not that much funding going in from government entities anyway.
There isn't.
Right. I want to step back just a second, because I want to make sure I understand the funding formula with schools at the county level. When I'm paying 87% of my property taxes go to the schools, and I'm in Olentangy School District, is part of that money going to the vouchers, or is it a completely different fund? Because the way I understand it, the money follows a kid. So if the kid goes to Olentangy, Olentangy gets the money. If a kid goes to a charter school, the charter school gets
the
money.
Well, the state support goes for the vouchers. Your tax dollars do not go for vouchers.
Okay.
Your property tax goes, I mean, if you read your income, if you read your property tax bill, it says X amount of money to X school district, X amount of money to the sewers, X amount of money to this.
Right.
It's all broken down. It's the state general revenue fund money that used to supplement property taxes and other taxes to help the schools that is being now siphoned off to go to vouchers.
Okay.
But of course, for every kid, say there were 100 kids in a school district that were on vouchers yesterday, that amount of money the state would get for those 100 kids comes out of the state funding for that. And when you increase the number of people on vouchers, the number of people, that the amount of money the state gets that district, because of the per pupil, say the state pays $1,000 for each kid in the school district. So, and there's 1,000 kids in the school district, which would be $1 million. If you start putting kids out of the school district, and that $1,000 for each of those kids leaves, so you have 200 kids leave, you know, that's $200,000 leaving that school district to go to vouchers that the school district now doesn't have.
Right.
Even though the costs for that school district haven't really changed.
Exactly.
Because, again, these private schools don't have to take special needs kids, don't have to take special ed kids. They can pick and choose who they want. They can't, I mean, the public schools are mandated by law, any child in their jurisdictional boundaries, the public school has to make arrangements for. So they have to make special arrangements for, you know, mentally disabled, for physically disabled, for learning disabled, for students that don't speak English. They have to make all those accommodations. The private charter schools don't do any of that stuff. Oh, and by the way, the charter schools don't have any regulation on them like the public schools do.
Right. And they are not tested the public schools are.
No, completely two different
So
systems.
You have no clue as to whether you're really getting a quote-unquote better education.
Well, all studies have shown that charter schools perform so much lower than private schools. Private schools are so much lower than public schools. It's ridiculous.
So we have several programs that help many Ohioans in paying their taxes, such as the Homestead Exemption Program, which we talked about, or property tax assistance programs in Franklin County. Are these programs or other innovative options the long-term solution we need to fix the tax system?
No. They're not.
Okay.
We have to, I mean, the fact that schools have to keep going back for asking the voters to raise their property taxes for levies. Mm-hmm. And last year, more than half school levies failed. And because the state's share of the cost for public education is becoming less and less and less every year. So the schools have to make that money up, or they cut teachers and they cut sports or they raise fees up for to participate in sports. They have to raise participation fees, or they cut music classes, or they cut field trips, or they cut busing. That's all what happens when, and it's not, I mean, these programs to help individuals with homestead and property taxes are to help individuals who are having tough times making their payments. That does nothing for the school district, who has to, if we keep cutting back the state share of public education, that has to be made up somehow, and that's by asking folks to vote on property tax levies. And, you know, and it's tough. So the schools have to get smarter, but it's a double-edged sword. I mean, people don't come into a community if their schools aren't good. That's why they go to Grandview or Burlington or Westerville or Hilliard. So it's a chicken and the egg. Now, I think I'm encouraged by Columbus, because the current incumbent members of the school board aren't running for election. We basically told them as a party we weren't going to support them, so they better not run again because they're doing a miserable job. And we have a bunch of people that are running now that are new, hopefully to get some new blood into that school board, especially the way they handled the strike and then the memo that came out about how to break up the teachers' union. That doesn't go well in a city that's predominantly Democratic and progressive. When memos come out from the school board trying to ways to break up the teacher union, that doesn't go over well. And it didn't. That's why these people are gone. So hopefully Columbus schools can make some decisions. The way they handled the school closings, all that stuff was just so horrendous that, I mean, people like me just couldn't. I mean, if I get upset without having kids in the district, then that means the level of discontent is extreme, and those people aren't going to last long. So we finally got rid of them.
And, you know, some of this is also other issues and other levies. So in my little township, of which, for a party that doesn't believe in big government, there are 19 townships in Delaware County, which is like way too much government. But we voted down the fire levy. And they had just built a new building. Fire and police were together. They built a new police building. So fire got this huge building. And suddenly, the message to us was, well, we're going to put this on the levy again, and if you don't pass it, we're closing down. And I'm like, that is no way to build a constituency to see why it's needed. You have a whole building. You've been getting new equipment. They're getting a new huge truck that had been on order for several years that was paid for a previous levy.
Oh, yeah, it's paid for. I mean, these trucks take 5-6 years to build.
Right, thing, right.
There's only a few people in the country that build them, and there's obviously everybody needs fire trucks.
Right. But
one
but
place to build them is actually up off of 33, just north of Dublin.
Exactly.
Right. Sutphin.
Sutphin, yeah.
But they're having labor issues up there. They don't want to pay the Teamsters Union. And so they had a couple of walkouts, and I participated in one of them, but I don't know if they've solved it since the summer or not. But so
yeah, but it's a really bad message when it's to vote for us or we're going to close down. That makes no sense.
Well, but schools can't close.
Right, exactly. Well, so, fire shouldn't be able to be able to.
No, and listen, school districts. I mean, we're not going to get a whole because they're all intertwined. But the less money the state gives to each district, the more they have to raise internally, and that means levies, which means more property tax increase, because schools can't levy a sales tax, and the schools can't levy income tax. They can only ask for property taxes. That's the only outlet they have. Mm-hmm. I mean, a county can raise sales tax up to a maximum amount. They can raise income tax up to a maximum amount, but schools can only ask for property taxes.
So when you have constituents calling you that tell you that they can't pay their property taxes, what advice do you give them?
I mean, I tell them to go check. They're in, obviously, all my district is Franklin County. I tell them to go check the auditor's website, because Michael Stigiano has all kind of things on his website to help people. There are all kind of groups, outside groups, that help people with these things. And whether it's low interest loans or grants or stuff like that. And Michael's office, Auditor Stigiano, I should call him. I shouldn't say Michael, but Auditor Stigiano has all of these things on his website. And they have been, I mean, the groups in Franklin County have been having these meetings across the county to help people that are having issues with this, to learn how to help with how paying for these things. And there are grants. Franklin County does have grants. The City of Columbus has grants to help that as well. But that's a short-term fix.
Right.
And, I mean, again, this is Franklin County, the most, I would say, the most progressive, long-range thinking county in Ohio by leaps and bounds, and also the county that's, you know, one of the fastest growing counties. Like Central Ohio is the only place growing in Ohio right now. So we are trying to, we meaning government at the local and county level, are trying to address these issues. It's not happening everywhere else. I mean, Mayor Ginther is trying to do all he can to get affordable housing built in City of Columbus. The new zoning laws to allow buildings on certain corridors to go up. It used to be a 4-story minimum, now maximum. Now they go up 7, 8, 9 stories on certain corridors. The COTA levy just passed with the West Broad line is going to be the first one. 161 is going to be one of these lines to, you know, streamline mm-hmm. bus service, put their own lane in, that sort of thing. So it's basically like it's light rail. I mean, I wish we had light rail. We're the largest city in North America. I mean, in the United States without light rail, by the way.
Right.
But if you did these buses that act like light rail, then they're kind of trying to solve it that way. But so Franklin County and Columbus are doing their part. The suburbs have to start doing their part. And I mean, I've talked to several, I told the Upper Arlington Rotary Club last summer that if Upper Arlington didn't do their part to provide affordable housing, that at some point in time, the City of Columbus was going to say, do this or, and the always the or is, we're going to turn off your water, because the City of Columbus controls all the water. Oh. Everybody in Central Ohio. And if the suburbs don't, I mean, because it can't all happen in Columbus. Each suburban community has to do their percentage of it, help do their part, and have to allow affordable housing to be built and make some changes. But all the suburbs have to do their part, or the City of Columbus is going to say, listen, you have X amount of time to do X amount of this, or, you know, we're going to need to turn off your water, or we're going to start charging you twice what you pay for it, because we have to, because you're not doing what you're supposed to, because that's what's going to happen.
So if somebody lives outside of Franklin County and outside of Central Ohio, there's really not a lot that we can suggest that they do if they're having trouble with their property taxes. Do they call
They call the local county auditor or county treasurer and try to find out what they can do.
And let their legislators know this needs to be fixed.
And that's why this, as I said earlier, the ability to pay a portion of your property taxes and have the rest of it, you know, be covered by the state, and then the state recoups it when you sell the house, is a way. But the state legislature has to allow counties to do that,
right?
Which again would keep a lot of people in their homes, because you figure when they die, they don't care what happens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's really like Medicaid.
Yes,
I mean, it's like the Medicaid pullback, where you get that money back after that person is gone.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's, you know, you're creating new science.
No, but the state's going to be able to say, okay, we're going to make up this money. I mean, if you have 1/8 of the properties in a county that do this, and you're losing that revenue for the schools, the state's going to make up that money until that house sells and they recoup that money. And only the state has the money to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why the state has to authorize counties and people to be able to do that. But that's a solution that doesn't end up costing the state in the end, because they're all going to be made whole at some point. But we got to do that to keep people in their homes.
Has any other state done this program?
There are NCSL, the National Conference of State Legislatures, has all the best practices, and they came in and testified. We have all this stuff as part of, a lot of this stuff comes from other states, what other states have done.
Right.
I mean, we're not trying to invent the wheel here.
Right.
All this stuff other states have had to deal with, and we're kind of trying to take the best of the best of it. But again, my thing is we have to give people relief, and we have to keep the schools, public schools, whole.
Yeah, exactly. So you're saying really bend everybody's ear at any level.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Okay. I think we've covered it. But we always ask our guests to let us know if there are any other bits and pieces of information that we haven't covered on this topic and that gives you an opportunity to give everybody your last words of wisdom.
I don't know if I have any words of wisdom. But no, I mean, it is an issue. And people cannot let their state legislators off the hook. They have to keep on them because we have to do something to solve, I mean, to fix this issue. And there are things, like I said, that are bipartisan that I've talked to several of my Republican colleagues who are all favor of, like I said, the circuit breaker, raising the homestead exemption, stuff that is low-hanging fruit that people can agree on that also keeps school districts whole, that we have to do something because we gotta, you know, we gotta stop trying to give income tax breaks to the wealthy. We gotta stop funding vouchers. We've gotta, everybody, I mean, citizens are affected by these property taxes and we've gotta do something about it. And we also have to start realizing that housing is a huge issue. And if we want people to fill all these jobs, the governor went around the state and all these new builds and all these things that are bringing in, but we don't have the people to fill those jobs right now. And if we don't get people, if we're not going to be able to get people in the state of Ohio to fill those jobs, if they have no place to live, yeah. If they can't afford to live here, you're not going to move for a job that you can't afford because you can't find a house and you can't afford to live here if you do find a house.
Right.
And my colleagues don't seem to want to think that the two of them go together. You can't talk about workforce development if you don't talk about housing and property taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. Our thanks to State Senator Bill DeMora of Ohio's 25th District. Thank you for joining us. And remember, listeners, thank you for joining us as well. You're going to find contact information and resources we discussed in the podcast show notes on our website at lookingforwardourway.com. And we're looking forward to hearing your feedback on this or any of our other podcast episodes.
The views and opinions expressed by the experts interviewed on this podcast are their own and don't necessarily reflect the views of the podcast hosts or any affiliated organizations. The information provided in these interviews is for general informational purposes only and should not be considered as professional advice. Listeners are encouraged to consult with qualified professionals for specific advice or information related to their individual circumstances. The podcast host and producers don't endorse or guarantee the accuracy, completeness, or reliability of any information provided by the experts interviewed. Listener discretion is advised.